Our computers conveniently tell us about something that's incoming. But what about those times when it's just in our brain, a little signal that goes off? Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Chrissy Hewitt. Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art, a twice-monthly segment that my co-host, Stephen DeLuque, and I produce here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. The focus of our program is the visual arts. Our guest today is Jerry Scott, a resident of Arroyo Grande and an internationally recognized cartoonist. He is also a painter, and we will discuss that in some depth next week. He is responsible for two cartoon strips, Baby Blues and Zits. They are now syndicated in over 1,200 newspapers worldwide. For both of these strips, he has a partner, different one for each. And we will learn today how he got into this business and how the strips are developed, 365 a year. He is certainly the best one to tell the story. So without further ado, we take you to Arroyo Grande. Stephen and I are here up in the beautiful hills of Varian Ranch and delighted to have as our guest today, Jerry Scott. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Hello, all.
This is an artist with two venues, so to speak. And so we're going to talk about each, but I think we'll start with the cartoon world because that is where many of us have gotten our initial exposure to you. So you have two at the moment running strips. One is called Baby Blues and the other is Zits. How did that part of your life ever start to happen?
It's been a while. I was a kid who liked two things. I like to draw pictures and I like to make people laugh. And maybe the third attribute that pushed me toward this career was that I wasn't qualified to do anything else. I always loved to draw cartoons. I always loved to read the comics in the newspaper. When I was a little kid, I had a paper route in South Bend, Indiana. On Sunday mornings, when those big heavy papers got dropped off at the end of my driveway before daylight, I would have to go out and fold them and stick them into my bike basket. I was the kid who got to read the funnies before anybody else by flashlight at the end of my driveway. And I just always loved the comics. I guess it was serendipitous that later on in my life, as a young adult, I happened to meet Rick Kirkman, who draws Baby Blues. He draws the finished art that you see in the newspapers. Rick was also sort of a fledgling cartoonist or a fan of comics, and he and I just became instant friends and worked toward, you know, finding a way to make a living at this. Rick and I first started out doing what they call gag cartoons for magazines, Saturday Evening Post and Saturday Review, and you know, there was a market. So we would do hundreds of these cartoons and mail them out in batches of 12 or 20 and get them back almost as quickly with rejection slips, and decided one day that we would try the comic strip business because that seemed like steady work. So we came up with a couple of really, really terrible comic strips that never saw the light of day, maybe more than a couple, and we just were not successful at it at all. Rick used to be a freelance designer, and I, in the late 70s and early 80s, I was really determined to be a syndicated comic strip artist. I started submitting ideas on my own to the comic strip syndicates. Kim and I had moved to Napomo, and so I was sort of on my own again, and I was a pest to the major newspaper syndicates, sending them ideas. The cartoonist who did the comic strip, Nancy and Sluggo, mm-hmm. passed away, and the syndicate that I had a submission into happened to be the syndicate that distributed that feature. and they needed somebody to take that strip over. Well, it also happened that Nancy was my least favorite comic strip in the world for all of time. And when I got the call, they called us, would you be interested in taking this strip over? It was just like the happiest, saddest moment of my life.
Yes.
I mean, couldn't I do Peanuts or something like that? We finally decided that it would be a good thing for me to do it. That was like on-the-job training for me. And here's a strip that was in hundreds of newspapers around the world. And they told me that I could make it my own. What they didn't expect was that I would really do that. But I did that comic strip for 12 years. And in the meantime, Rick and I got back together. Kim and I had moved back to Arizona for Kim to go to graduate school. Rick was a freelance designer, and I would go down to his office on Thursday afternoons to come up with the idea for the next great American comic strip. And I'd sit in a corner next to his drawing board as he met his deadlines, and I'd think of stupid ideas for comic strips. Well, right about that time, Rick and his wife had had their second baby. Kim and I had no children at the time, and I just was fascinated by the mess that he had become physically. It was just, it seemed funny to me because every week I would go down there, he would look just a little worse, a little more stained, a little more wrinkled, a little more, you know, hollow-eyed. He tried to explain to me that children are a lot of work. Okay, I took his word for it. And then just one day, it was just one of those things where, you know, the last terrible idea I had about a guy with two heads and two personalities didn't seem like a good idea. I said, why don't we do a comic strip about a couple with a new baby? And it was one of those moments in my life, and I've had a few of them, where you just hear the angels sing. That one seemed right. And we started to work on it, and we soundly rejected by all the syndicates with our first submission. We sent it in as a comic strip, I'm going to say first. That is multi-panel sequential mm-hmm. art. Bam, it came back really fast. I can only think that they went to extra expense to reject that at such speed. One of the syndicates did suggest, why don't you try this as a single panel, like Far Side, which was very popular at the time. Okay, so I rewrote all the jokes. Rick was doing the drawing. I always felt that Rick was a superior artist, and the only other job left was the writing, so I took that job. So we redid it as a panel and sent it out with great excitement, and it came back quickly again with a suggestion from the same syndicate, you know, maybe you should try this as a comic strip.
Left and right hand and whatever.
Long memories they didn't have. So we redid it as a comic strip. New jokes, new drawings. All of the rejections came back. And so we just pulled the plug on the idea. It was called Baby Blues. I think it was called Baby Blues then. It was first called Oh Baby, I believe. Rick said, I've got to get back to being a dad and making a living. And I had the Nancy comic strip to do. And we put it in a box and went about our lives. And a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call one afternoon from a very small newspaper syndicate, Creator Syndicate. And they said, we love this idea. Would you do this comic strip for us? And so we had to get re-enthusiastic about it because we had kind of convinced ourselves that it was pretty lousy based on the feedback we've gotten from the experts. So we re-energized ourselves, and that's when Baby Blues started.
What was the first newspaper that it appeared in?
One of our very first clients was the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, Detroit News, Rocky Mountain News, and the Atlanta Constitution. I think those were our flagship beginning. We started out humble beginnings. I think maybe 60 newspapers. We built the list up over the next 5 years at Creator Syndicate to about 200. And then we changed to a different syndicate, King Features Syndicate. And they took us from 200 to where we are now at about, I think, a little over 1,200 newspapers worldwide.
Cool. What year?
Baby Blues started in 1990, January, I'm going to say 7th.
If you'd said the 9th, it yeah. happens to be my birthday, I would have gone, yes, 7th is close enough. So This collaborative effort, are you sketching out some basic scenes and then he redoes them and fills them in, or is he doing all of the drawing and you're doing all of the captions? Where do you start?
With Baby Blues, I do all my drawing in my head. We've developed this sort of working relationship and style that doesn't make any sense to anybody, including me, but he doesn't want to see my drawings. So if I do a drawing, I keep it quiet. I keep it in the sketchbook. It's sharpened my ability to write descriptive, very short direction. What I do is I write material for Baby Blues as television or movie script, basically. I number each panel. First panel, living room, Wanda's folding clothes, and Baby Wren's on the floor, and Hemi flies through on a rocket ship. And then the dialogue for that panel. And go on for all 3 to 4 panels. The whole process starts with me, starts with the idea. I sort of view myself as the screenwriter, as the casting director, as the director proper, producer, because I do a lot of the phone calls and stuff for the business thing. And then I hand it over to Rick, who's like maybe the principal director and actors. Because it's such a big part of doing a comic strip is acting. It doesn't make sense to most people that it is, but those characters are so specifically drawn to move the action forward and to inform the reader what their feelings are. It's so surprising. The minute changes in the position of an eyeball can totally change the meaning of a comic strip. So the actor, Rick, takes my idea. He does a pencil sketch and then emails it back to me. Now, it used to be faxing. In the beginning, it was turning around at his desk. Here, what do you think of this? And then I give a couple of notes. After 25 years of this, there's not very many notes. I gave him notes this morning on one strip, as a matter of fact. And he does the finished artwork, and then we start all over again because it's 365 days a year. Without fail.
You are listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio. Our guest today is Jerry Scott, internationally recognized cartoon strip creator. He and his partners are responsible for Baby Blues and Zits. We'll continue now with Jerry's story of how these strips get created and some insight as to how he views the world.
And these are running stories, too, so you have to have plotted out a whole plot line for a while to work on that.
Sometimes, yeah. More often, we're doing a joke a day. I'm finding, as the years go by and the readership changes and the way people get their entertainment, and there are fewer people who subscribe to a newspaper today than there were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, at least it's my personal feeling, that the readers aren't necessarily looking at the comic strip every day in the newspaper, but maybe more occasionally. And so we still do collection books and that sort of thing, or people will look online and see the strips. But to address the readership, I enjoy doing the more single-shot, single-standalone jokes with an occasional story now.
Like dung beetles.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I read that last part of it this morning. You can fill people in, but I just went, okay, I really don't even know this man yet, but I know. This is a sense of humor that I'm enjoying immensely.
To give your child cast as a dung beetle in a play, I think it's a big moment in parenthood.
Was it yesterday that she was complaining loudly that she had been sent to this camp to do drama and then got this role? Her mother's sitting there saying, someday you'll laugh. But it was also that the mother was knowing that she would never be let off the hook.
It's really fun to do the strip. Baby Blues originally was largely based on Rick and his family and their two kids. Wanda looks a lot like Rick's wife, Suki. The house that the McPhersons live in is based on Rick's and Suki's first house. Sort of keeps us, living in the past in a way. Kim and I had our first child then after 3 years. So I had written the first 3 years of the strip about a family with a new baby without the benefit of ever being a father. And then when it finally happened, I had to completely go back to the beginning and write all the stuff that I missed that I didn't understand. And so that's why Hammy was born. Zoe had gotten to be about 2 or 3 years old by that time, and said, we need another baby because I got all this experience that we need to highlight again.
I was thinking about that the other day in terms of, and I can easily contrast this to comic strip Nancy. She never grew up, and I've really been enjoying the fact that these three kids are aging, fortunately, slowly enough so that we don't have to have them in high school already. Do you find yourself kind of living their life now in terms of just, oh, that's an idea, or how do things trigger for what comes next?
Yeah, I think that's right. Or they live my life. I think it's
right. Got it.
So I have this great advantage, I believe, over the average person where almost any lousy thing that happens to me or us, I can make money off of. So if the washing machine leaks, there's a week's worth of strips. Or, you know, if the dishwasher breaks, or if the, you know, fender benders or anything like that, you know, projectile vomiting, money in the bank for me.
Asking the question in terms of just sort of how things are coming into your head or how you're imagining this group, I tend to be a very slow reader. So when I do, I'm taking in pretty much every word one at a time. And for instance, being in Italy, carving marble, and there's no one to talk to because I don't speak Italian when I've left the workshop and I'm reading. And then I come back and I'm thinking of the characters that I was reading about and wondering what was happening in their day.
Baby Blues has been such a great way for me to grow as an artist. And then Rick and I, our friendship kind of got, you know, deeper. We know a lot about each other, you know, and our, you know, separate families and how are we, you know, raising kids and have two different styles of parenting. This weird kind of partnership that we have where we sort of read each other's minds and develop this language where it's very spare. The direction, if you hear us talk about the strip, for example, you wouldn't have any idea what we're speaking about because we made up some words. And when things happen, like we had, Kim and I had our second child, I surprised Rick. I called him and I said, you know, congratulations, you know, you and I are having a new baby too. He's always the last to know. I had written, you know, Baby Wren, based on my daughter Katie's birth, and so I got to mine that, you know, that vein of humor again. So along around 1995, 1996, I was asked to leave the Nancy comic strip. There had been a change at the management, and there was the new vice president at United Feature Syndicate who just hated what I was doing with the Nancy comic strip. They fired me is what they did. And I just had my first child, and Rick and I had Baby Blues, but we were both, you know, making all of $350 a month. So it was really hard to raise a family on that. It was New Year's Eve at about 1995, 96. And we had a couple of friends over. Our next door neighbors had two kids about Abby's age, my older daughter's age, and neighbors down the hill came up, and the kids were going to bed. It was midnight, and we were sitting on the playroom floor, sharing a bottle of wine and talking about whatever, kids probably, because that's what everybody talks about when they have kids. And Bob, my neighbor, who he and his wife had a 15-year-old boy, and Bob, maybe three or four glasses into the bottle of wine, he said, you know, if you ever want to do another comic strip, you ought to do one about a teenage boy. And I'd known that their son was challenging, because stories I'd heard, but there went that chime again that I had heard before, and it was like, bling, that's not a bad idea. Maybe I can do that. Maybe I can replace this income instead of, you know, getting another paper out or whatever my idea would be. And so I started to work on this comic strip about a teenage boy. I know how to do this job, and I was pretty productive, and I stacks of these comic strips. And I got a phone call one afternoon from my new friend, who I did not know well, Jim Borgman, who was the editorial cartoonist at the Cincinnati Inquirer. He and I had been on the board of directors for the National Cartoonist Society, and so we sort of knew each other. He called and he said, hey, I've got to come to your town. I've got to come to Phoenix to talk to the press club, give a speech. And it's February, and I'm looking for an excuse not to go back to Cincinnati, you know, too quickly. What else could I do? And I said, well, what I would do if I were you, I'd go to Sedona. It's a lovely spot, and there's this great resort that I've been to once, and you get a little cabin, and they have these great meals. And by the time I was done describing it, I had sort of invited myself to come along. So Jim came to town, he gave a speech. The deal was, okay, we'll do this, we'll go away for a few days, with the only rule being we don't talk about comic strips or comics or cartoons or editorial cartoons. Just, let's just go and just hang out. Jim is one of the smartest, gentlest people I know in the world, and I seemed like I just absorbed knowledge from him whenever, you know, he was around. So we did that. We went to Sedona. And then after the couple of days, I totally broke the rule. I brought my sketchbook because I had this idea about this teenage boy that everything I was drawing looked like Nancy and Sluggo.
Short, funny that.
Tina, and so I said, oh, I need some help. And so I brought some beer over to his cabin one afternoon, and we sat on the porch, and I said, look, I need some advice. And he looked at the sketches, and he said, oh, you know, this is funny. He said, but if you're asking me how to, I would draw a teenage boy, well, I would do it like this. And he drew Jeremy. And it was, just, and then that chime again. And it was just like, man, I don't want to do another comic strip with another person. I want to have my own vision. I want to do all the work myself. I want to be the actor and the director. But, you know, he's so good. And Jim is one of the best artists in the world. And so we stayed up the rest of the night talking about the business. He didn't know anything about comic strips. And by the time we got done with that Sedona trip, we had decided, well, forget it. We're not going to do this. You know, at least we know that. It was fun. And I kept coming up with ideas. And I kept faxing those ideas to Jim. And then he would redraw them and fax them back to me. I was like, oh, that's good. And I put it in a stack. And then he'd do it again. And then he'd do it. And pretty soon we had this stack of stuff. And I called him and I said, look, we either have to decide to do a comic strip or just unplug our fax machines because I think it's good. So we decided to try it, and it worked.
Absolutely. And the biggest shoes this side of...
Well, that's typical of teenage boys.
There's one that's sitting in my desk drawer. I have a thing about how most people these days are not very much in tune with their physical world and sort of the hows and the whys of things. I think it was a switch that wasn't working in Jeremy's house. So he's telling his dad, who says, oh, well, we can replace that. And Jeremy's response was, we have to sell the house in order to... So that ability to connect into those, you know, communication things has just been wonderful.
It's an interesting job to write zits because of that situation. Zits runs in about 1,800 newspapers worldwide in 45 different countries and 15 or 16 languages. So there are, as does Baby Blues, in nearly the same number of countries and languages. So there, the limitations as the writer is that I can't do that many American mm-hmm. gags. I can't do puns, you know, mm-hmm. language-based gags. Mm-hmm. It's a very narrow kind of alley that I have to walk there, but you can do human nature mm-hmm. material. That is the same all over the world. Technology is pretty much the same everywhere. I have a friend who is a cartoonist in Helsinki, and he told me this story. He was at a cocktail party. Jyrki used to be in the Finnish military, And so I think there was some sort of military component to this cocktail party. But he said there was one of the most important generals in the Finnish army was there. And Jyrki somehow got a chance to talk to him and introduced himself. And I am Jyrki Viano, and I am a cartoonist. And he said the general looked at him with what like those general faces, you know, not much humor in it. And the guy says, I do not read the comic strips. Except for that one about the teenage boy. That one I like. Just was thrilled because, you know, that jumping, you know, the language barrier and a culture barrier, this guy obviously had a teenager who was giving him trouble. And we get that response from readers all over the world really often. And that's how we know we're sort of hitting the target, is when we, different languages, it still translates, you know.
And speaking of all over the world, you've now indicated that you're obviously no longer in the same room with the people that you're co-creating with. So now it's mostly, what, email and FaceTime? Or
I kind of hate FaceTime.
I don't do FaceTime either, but just trying to sound like I know something here.
It's okay with my mom or my sisters. But there's this weird thing that over the years that has developed between Rick and me and Jim and me is that we work so much better when we're not in the same room, same town, same state. In fact, the further I move away from Rick, the better the strip is, Baby Blues, and I don't know why that is. But I went to visit Jim, who had moved recently to Colorado. And so we decided we'd do a little bit of work while I was there. We'd go to a coffee shop with our sketchbooks and come up with a summer's worth of ideas. That was this lofty goal, which we'd never met. So we went to this coffee shop, and I've got a photograph someplace. And we sat at a table like this across from each other with our sketchbooks, and we're all ready, and, you know, it was so uncomfortable looking him in the face that without thinking about it, we find ourselves turning around and facing in opposite directions, talking back to back, talking to each other, and it just worked. So everything, the idea started coming, but I couldn't look at the guy and come up with anything funny.
You simply weren't used to working in that mode. I'm sorry, I can't see you and do this.
Our guest today on Ears on Art has been Jerry Scott, local resident, internationally recognized cartoon strip creator of Baby Blues and Zits. For both of these newspaper cartoons, he has a co-creator. They doing the drawings, and he does the storyline. If they are not part of your repertoire, you can find them in the local Tribune. Jerry is also a painter, and we will be discussing that part of his life next week in part two of this conversation. This has been Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program created by me, Chrissy Hewitt, and my co-host, Stephen DeLuque. The programs are produced at KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Look forward to meeting up next week for part two of our conversation with Jerry Scott. I am Chrissy Hewitt, and on behalf of my co-host Stephen DeLuque, wish to thank you so much for listening. As always, have fun exploring the Central Coast for all of the art riches that you will find.